Good afternoon, Dr. Dan Guerra, Authentic Biochemistry Podcast, 27 February 2024. This is going to be chapter number 2 in plasmalogens, those ether-linked glycerophospholipids we introduced just yesterday. So what we need to do is go through some metabolic pathways to understand where plasmalogens fit in, first of all, phospholipid metabolism, and then signaling pathways. Ultimately, we're going to talk about platelet activating factor. As I said, it's called PAF acetur, or platelet activating factor acetate ether, acid ether, you see? Because the acetate's on the two position of the glycerol backbone, and the ether, of course, is on the ether linkage, that is on the one position. Remember that? All right, now with normal phospholipid metabolism, there are multiple ways to generate the collection of molecular species of lipid that you find in the membrane. Amino acids play a role, of course. So one way of getting to a family of phospholipids is starting with serine, the amino acid L-serine. So you can phosphorylate serine, the cell can phosphorylate serine to phosphonoserine. Phosphonoserine can be decarboxylated to phosphonoethanolamine. Then it can be methylated, phosphonoethanolamine, PEA, to phosphonomonomethylethanolamine. Then progressively dimethylethanolamine. Then finally, phosphonocholine. Depending on the source of the preparation, serine can be directly decarboxylated to ethanolamine, and then the methylation pathway continue all the way to just choline. And then choline is phosphorylated, or dimethylethanolamine is phosphorylated, etc. Now, once the phosphono derivatives are made, each of them can react with CTP, cellular triphosphate. And when that occurs, the cell will make CDP choline, or, for example, CDP serine or CDP ethanolamine. Now, CDP choline or ethanolamine or serine can be used directly to synthesize sphingolipids because choline is a major head group for sphingomyelin. But we won't talk about sphingolipids right now. We're going to stay with the glycerol lipids. So CDP choline interacting with diacylglycerol, reacting with diacylglycerol, will make phosphatidylcholine. And likewise, you will make phosphatidylethanolamine and phosphatidylserine utilizing the nucleotide base reacting with the diacylglycerol generated from phosphatidic acid phosphatase. Now, diacylglycerol can also be used to generate phosphatidylinositol, phosphatidylglycerol, and of course cardiolipin, again reacting with CTP. There's also an acyl-CoA pool which fills all of those phospholipids because of phospholipase activity and because of glycerol 3-phosphate acyltransferase reactions, so that fatty acids can be swapped out in the 1 and 2 position so that you generate a whole series of molecular species with unique fatty acids in the 1 and 2 position of the glycerol backbone. Of course, the polar head group, we just went through the major synthetic routes. The acyl-CoA pool itself can be generated by the import of fatty acids through the CD36 orphan receptor, or more commonly, de novo fatty acid synthesis, which is cytoplasmic, but which has a derivatization near membranes so that fatty acids can go completely coupled into a membrane and then be utilized to generate the given molecular species of phospholipids, phosphoglycerol lipids, and sphingolipids, as well as these plasmalogens. All right. So that's a brief overview of eukaryotic phosphoglycerol lipid synthesis. And I don't apologize because I think that that's clearly enough for you to gather where we were at, right? So let's proceed and talk about peroxisome. The peroxisomal enzymes GNPAT and AGPS will catalyze the synthesis of acyl dihydroxyacetone phosphate and alkyl dihydroxyacetone phosphate, respectively. So the AGPS catalyzes the formation of alkyl DAP by replacing, remember, this is a swapping out of the fatty acid. So you're replacing the fatty acyl chain of acyl dihydroxyacetone phosphate with that long chain alcohol. Therefore, you're generating then an ether linkage, right? Carbon, oxygen, carbon bond, where that what for the carbon is not going to be a carbonyl, but it's going to be now bound as an R group, right? So there's an enzyme called FAR1. Now that's a peroxisomal carboxy tail anchored polypeptide. And that enzyme will reduce a fatty acid to a long chain fatty alcohol. So that's where the fatty alcohol comes from to generate that initial alkyl functional ether group on the one position of these ether-linked, including plasmalogen, lipids. Okay. Alkyl dihydroxyacetone phosphate has to be reduced. It's reduced to alkyl glycerol 3-phosphate. So it's dihydroxyacetone phosphate because you have a ketone in the two position. Now that ketone is going to be reduced to an alcohol. So it's going to be alkyl glycerol 3-phosphate or alkyl G3P. Then that particular intermediate can be further used to synthesize plasmalogens. And the rest of the steps, those were all peroxisomal reactions, are going to happen in the endoplasmic reticulum. And the final step for the plasmalogen ethanolamines, known as plasmanoyl ethanolamine, initiating with that as the substrate, will be a desaturase. So the plasmanoyl ethanolamine desaturase 1, the gene for that is PEDS1, is going to use oxygen and cytochrome B5. So the plasmalogens are transported to the post-Golgi, okay, including the endosomes and the plasma membranes. Now that occurs in an ATP-required manner, but it is not vesicular transport. So understand that that process has to occur. So right now, we did all the peroxisomal biosynthesis, the acyl-CoA plus DHAP, the GNPAT, that transferase, that acyl transferase, making acyl-DHAP, and then the AGPS making alkyl DHAP because of the derivatization of the fatty acid to a long chain alcohol to make alkyl DHAP. Now that's moving again now to this endoplasmic reticulum where plasmalogen ethanolamine is synthesized. Okay. So that's where we are right now. So you have an idea. And that translocation required ATP. Ultimately, plasmalogens localize most often to the inner leaflet of the plasma membrane. And that is a necessary component of the signaling the plasmalogens ultimately do. But there's a signaling that monitors the cellular concentration or mole percent of the plasmalogen that's in the plasma membrane to the peroxisome. And that coordinates the stability of that fatty acid reductase, okay, to the fatty alcohol. So that's a necessary component of this regulation. And so that actually is believed to be one of the rate limiting reactions generating the alcohol from the fatty acid. That's again, happening at the peroxisome. So there's a signaling mechanism from the plasma membrane to generate the mobilization and activation of that fatty acid reductase to the peroxisomal membrane. All right. And that's an entirely different set of regulatory systems that has to occur. Now, plasmalogens in the inner leaflet of the plasma membrane also contribute to the 3-phosphoinositide-dependent protein kinase 1, PDK1. And that mediates the phosphorylation of AKT, as you know, and that will then ultimately participate in one of the many things that AKT is involved in, including cell proliferation and activation of mTORC1. Okay, so it's a whole other process of these plasmalogens that we don't talk too much about, but it's necessary for you to understand. There's also a flipase, which is associated with the CDC50 protein. Flipase is ATP 8B2, and that will mobilize plasmalogens and phospholipids to the outer and inner leaflet of the plasma membrane. And that regulates then the exposure of the plasmalogen to the mobilization of the fatty acid reductase to the peroxisomal membrane. Okay? There's more detail there, but that ultimately where I want to get to right now. It's just some metabolic pathway, and we're now going to mention to you again about peroxisomes. Peroxisomes are one of my favorite organelles because they do so many things in mammalian cell, and in plants, peroxisomes can exist as a peroxisome, but also as a glyoxysome, which is also another very interesting biochemical pathway, which I've talked about in the past. Now, for now, let's go back to the peroxisomes. In mammalian cells, what occurs in a peroxisome in terms of metabolism? Well, you can get beta oxidation of the very long chain fatty acids, which are coming off the plasma membrane. You can get alpha oxidation of branch chain fatty acids, which typically come from the diet. And there's also then this entire nested synthesis of ether-linked phospholipids. There's also some bile acid activity in peroxisomes. Okay, so multiple metabolic pathways that are in those organelles, which are often overlooked. Now, of course, you know, beta oxidation occurs primarily in the mitochondria, but that peroxisomal beta oxidation involves very unique fatty acid substrates. By that, I mean basically the very long chain polyunsaturated fatty acids go through beta oxidation there. So there are a few extra steps in that beta oxidation because of all those double bonds. There has to be a shifting of those double bonds, which means a fair amount of cis-trans isomerization along the way. And I went through that pathway quite a while back, but I will again, because that's how trans fatty acids are simply converted to cis fatty acids and metabolites, just like cis fatty acids. I think I explained that to the audience more than once in probably even the last year. Okay, but the important thing here is that this ether lipid synthesis absolutely requires a peroxisome. Okay, now I mentioned alpha oxidation, so I better explain it a little bit. Alpha oxidation is significant for the catabolism of these branch chain fatty acids. The reaction is catalyzed by a monooxygenase, and it requires, like most monooxygenases, molecular oxygen and ferrous iron. And then there also is a necessary component of ascorbate or sometimes tetrahydropteridine. So this particular enzyme, this alpha oxidation reaction, is found in the mammalian brain, and it's also very common in plants because these branch chain fatty acids, such as the phytanic acids, are actually chlorophyll esters in higher plants. And that's how humans digest them in the diet. That's why they need to be catabolized via alpha oxidation. Okay. So alpha oxidation starts with an acyl-CoA synthetase. And so if phytanic acid is taken in the diet, the reaction product of that synthesis is a phytanoyl coenzyme A. Phytanoyl coenzyme A will react with oxygen and 2-oxoglutarate to generate carbon dioxide. So it's decarboxylating, of course, succinate. So that enzyme is the phytanoyl CoA hydroxylase. Product of that reaction is 2-hydroxyphytanoyl CoA, which then is catabolized by a 2-hydroxyphytanoyl CoA lyase to formyl CoA, formic acid ultimately generated, and also that could be decarboxylated. The other product, of course, is pristanol. Okay, it's an aldehyde. And then that reacts with NADP and the other dehydrogenase generating pristanoic acid. And now you no longer have that methyl group, so that branch chain is gone, and that pristanoic acid, can now go through normal beta oxidation. Okay, so that's how that phytanic acid, which is a methyl group, and that carbon immediately adjacent to the carboxylic acid, so that that methyl group can be dealt with, okay? Because that's an unusual substitution there. So that's actually on the beta carbon. So you have a carboxylic acid, then you have an alpha carbon, then you have the beta carbon. That's why beta oxidation can occur on phytanic acid. Phytanic acid, the other name for it, is 3,7-11-15 tetramethyl hexadecanoic acid. Okay, just so we have all that squared away. And there is a disease called Refsum's disease where that particular alpha oxidation is blocked. And when it's blocked, it can cause a severe disease. And we can talk about that some other time. For now, I think it's sufficient to get to where I want to be now. Another biosynthetic pathway I'd like to cover now, just so it's out of the way, is the synthesis of platelet activating factor, PATH. There are two pathways to make PATH, remodeling and de novo. So the remodeling pathway starts with phosphatidylcholine, basic phospholipid lipid, very common in the membrane. And that pathway involves substituting an acetate for what is normally a long-chain fatty acid, the two position of PC, right? And of course, there's more going to be more to it because you have to make the ether linker. So the PATH-producing cells, such as endothelial cells and neutrophils, phosphatidylcholine content will range dramatically because of PATH synthesis in the plasma membrane, anywhere from 10% all the way up to 40-45%. And that change in PC is because of PATH synthesis. It's very significant in those particular cells. The ones I just told you, neutrophils and endothelial cells, are commonly generating platelet activating factor because that's where it's necessary for production. So the remodeling pathway has two steps. It contributes to the bulk of all the synthesis of PATH. PATH is also directly linked to inflammatory responses. So, of course, the first reaction is going to be a phospholipase. It's going to be the A2. It reacts with phosphatidylcholine. It's going to remove the fatty acid from that 2 position. And thence, that fatty acid can start the inflammatory response. Typically, it's arachidonate. And so that arachidonate can then be metabolized by COX or LOX to generate any of the particular eicosanoids, which can then lead to an inflammatory response. The other product of that reaction is going to be lysophosphatidylcholine. So lysophosphatidylcholine then reacts with this acetyl transferase from acetyl-CoA as the substrate to generate platelet activating factor. But the synthesis of PATH with that remodeling pathway can occur inside the cell on the nuclear membrane or the ER. And ultimately, obviously, the phosphatidylcholine has to have that swapping out of that fatty acid at the one position for a fatty alcohol, which means the peroxisome is going to have to be involved again, right? Because that reaction, that fatty acid reductase, is going to be a peroxisomal membrane biosynthetic reaction. Okay. So now once that fatty acid is swapped out for the alcohol, then we have the platelet activating factor essentially synthesized, because platelet activating factor has as its head group bisphenylcholine. Okay. So let's kind of go through this reaction. Okay. Let's talk about first dihydroxyacetone phosphate picking up fatty acid for the one position. And now we have a one acyl dihydroxyacetone phosphate. Replacement of that fatty acid. This is now plasmalogen biosynthesis, okay? It's going to lead into the Frank PAF synthesis. I'm just giving you the plasmalogen again. The swapping out of the fatty acid with the fatty alcohol, which was generated by the reductase, is then going to give you that ether linkage in the one position. Ultimately, then you're going to reduce that ketone function at the two position to the alcohol with NADPH. Then react it with acetyl-CoA or with fatty acyl-CoA. It's fatty acyl-CoA, it's going to generate choline plasmalogen. If it's acetate, we're on our way to synthesis of PAF. See? That's why I'm going through this path, these two pathways at the same time. Okay. All right. And phosphatidic acid is going to be one of the intermediates, only it's going to be a phosphatidic acid with an ether linkage at the one position and either an acetate or a fatty acid at two position, right? And then that phosphate can be removed, and then there's a reaction with CDP choline, and that's how choline plasmalogen is generated. Okay? All right. So let's go through this PAF reaction now. This is much more detailed, but that's what's fun. Starting with the alkyl phosphatidylcholine, where the second position is going to be held with, let's say, arachidonic acid. Phospholipase A2 will generate alkyl lyso-PAF. Lyso-PAF then will be reacted with lyso-PAF acyl transferase, or acetyl transferase, excuse me, making PAF. PAF is alkyl acetyl phosphonylcholine, right? Alkyl one position, acetate two position, right? Okay, now, same time, phosphonoethanolamine, it's already got the alkenyl function. That's going to be the vinyl ether, right? That lysoplasmalogen, which has a free hydroxyl group, because it's already been converted to the alcohol, right? Can react with a coenzyme A acyl transferase, picking up, for example, arachidonic acid in the two position. Now you have alkenyl arachidonyl phosphatidylethanolamine. That's a plasmalogen. That's ethanolamine plasmalogen, right? Of course. Now, alkyl or acyl or alanyl acetyl phosphatidylethanolamine phosphatidylcholine is yet another molecular species that can be called acetyl phospholipid as a generic, right? Now that can be also metabolized or synthesized via lysophospholipid, again, where that two position on the gastro backbone has already been reduced to the alcohol. So it's another retailoring reaction to generate acetylphospholipid. Acetylphospholipid ultimately can be used to make platelet activating factor, of course, depending on what the polar head group is. Polar head group's phosphonylcholine is going to be PAF. Okay. Now, the de novo pathway starts off with alkyl acetyl phosphate, Then there'll be an alkyl acetyl phosphate acetyl transferase, and then a phosphyl hydrolase, and that will generate alkyl acetyl that will give you the intermediate that will react with the choline phosphatidyltransferase. That will then generate ultimately PAF as well. Okay. So the de novo pathway starts off with an alkyl acetyl in the 1-2 position. And then all it requires then is CDP choline. So that's considered the de novo pathway. So that gives you a little bit more detail about how PAF is generated utilizing the plasmalogen or the phosphatidylcholine as an intermediate in the pathway. Now, NADPH is necessary for these reactions, and remember how that is functional. Glycolysis generates pyruvate. Pyruvate enters the mitochondrial matrix, where it can be reacted with either the PDH or pyruvate carboxylase, generating OAA and acetyl-CoA, and then therefore citrate via citrate synthase. Citrate leave the mitochondria, and then ATP citrate lyase will generate now cytoplasmically acetyl-CoA, which could be used for PAF synthesis at the peroxisome, or fatty acid synthesis in the cytoplasm. The other product from that ATP citrate lyase is OAA, and OAA will react with the cytosolic malate dehydrogenase, taking NADH to NAD, generating malate. The malate then can react with malic enzyme decarboxylating to pyruvate and generating NADPH. And the NADPH is what's necessary for all that reductive biosynthesis for plasmalogens, for fatty acid synthesis, and also, I should mention, for cholesterolgenesis. So now you see our intermediary metabolism is coupled to all these other reactions. Okay. A couple other things to just kind of fill in. Fatty acid elongation after palmitoyl CoA is generated occurs at the mitochondria. Okay. So that will require acetyl-CoA reacting with the palmitoyl-CoA via a reaction known as beta-ketothiolase, now generating steroyl-CoA. And coenzyme A is the other product. And so it drives the reaction, break up that thioester bond. Now, steroyl-CoA will react with beta-hydroxyacyl-CoA dehydrogenase, taking NADH to NAD, generating the enoyl CoA, which will then be dehydrated. And finally, that intermediate will be reduced with NADPH, generating now finally the product. Okay, so that's the final elongation for taking palmitate and synthesizing steroyl CoA from palmitoyl CoA. So that's another reaction we had to cover. Now, you know, there are desaturases, for example, to make oleic acid for that one position. It's going to end up being an alcohol after the reduction. So there's going to be a requirement for steroyl-CoA desaturase. Remember, there are also delta-6 and delta-5 desaturases and multiple elongations, which can then yield all the different molecular species of very long-chain polyunsaturated fatty acids. So I'm not going to go through that series of pathways right now, but you understand that functionality is also absolutely required to occur. All the different derivatization of all the fatty acids, starting with palmitate and going to stearate and oleate, and then coming from the essential fatty acids, linoleic and alpha-linolenic acid, generating all the potential very long-chain fatty acids, which can be utilized for plasmalogen and phospholipid and sphingolipid metabolism. And that was at the beginning of this lecture where I was talking about acyl-CoA pools, right? So I'm going to have to end here. So I'm going to say it's Dr. Dan Guerra, Authentic Biochemistry Podcast. Bye for now.